What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 3. No, hang on. Welcome to season 3, episode 2 of Celluloid Fever Dreams, a weekly dive into the world of cinema where I, your host, Wyndham Jennings, try to find a film that I think deserves a little more love and or respect. Could be anything from a low-budget B film or Z film even, all the way up to an Oscar-winning big-budget blockbuster that I just don't feel enough people know about or talk about anymore. This week, we're jumping back to 2016 for the film Officer Down. Now, before we go any further, I want to, and I don't do this often, you know, I try to run a show that's generally about, PG, PG-13, even if some of the films that I talk about deal with some rougher things. But I do feel I need to give a warning before we get into this film, because there are some graphic elements in it, violence and sexual situations, that I'm going to be bringing up as I discuss the film. So if this is something that you're playing in a place where you don't want people to hear me talk about those things, or I don't know, maybe you play this in the car in front of your children, you're not ready for them to hear about these kind of things, well, I'd suggest that you either cut it off now, yell out earmuffs so that people know to cover their ears, or I don't know, just don't care and keep playing it. It's up to you. Okay, everybody ready? Good. This week's film is Officer Down, as I mentioned. It's based on an Image Comics graphic novel that was released in 2010, if my sources are right, and was created by Joe Casey and Chris Barnum. The two of them have worked on comics such as the X-Men, Avengers, Wildcats, The Adventures of Superman. Joe Casey is also one of the creators, as part of the group Man of Action, of the cartoon Ben 10, as well as providing scripts for shows like Sonic Prime, Ultimate Spider-Man, and Generator Rex. So, what is the film about? Well, as always, we start with our patent-pending, award-eligible, three-second synopsis. Wish.com RoboCop stuff happens. For a longer synopsis, well, a rookie LAPD officer is brought in and made part of a special team of officers who are assigned as backup to the police department's secret weapon, Officer Down, a veteran police officer that, no matter how many times he's killed, is resurrected through special technology kept underneath the LAPD police headquarters. The film's distributed by Magnet Entertainment, which has released several films I've talked about on the podcast, including Deadlands and Kill Me Three Times. They're sort of hit and miss with me. Like I said, there are a few films I really love by them. Like I said, the two I just mentioned, Deadlands and Kill Me Three Times. And then there's just a few that I've watched that just didn't do anything for me at all, like Blue Iguana. So where does Officer Down fall into this spectrum? It falls a little more towards the films I really liked. In fact, let me just go off on a tangent here. This is the kind of film that I genuinely, unapologetically, unironically love. Now, I'm not talking about the nudity or the over-the-top violence or the cartoonish levels of blood, though things like that aren't always negatives. I just mean a film that just embraces its conceit, that doesn't apologize for what it is, that just that doesn't try to be anything more than what it is. Officer Down is a comic book film, and it fully embraces the over-the-top violence and nature of the comic it is based on. Much like an American take on, say, something like Judge Dredd. But as a film, it sort of embraces the over-the-top, testosterone-filled action of films like Dirty Harry or the later Rambo films. But it's also mixed with a goofy sense of humor in some of the characters and the situations. And to me, the film is at its best when it just does that. It just fully embraces all these elements and throws them together, which is pretty much the first half of the film. And like I said, these are the kind of films that I just genuinely love. To go back to the Bruce Campbell quote that I throw out every once in a while, and sort of the basis for the whole podcast. You know, it's doesn't matter if it's a good film, doesn't matter if it's a bad film, that's irrelevant. It's should be an entertaining film. And that's not the exact quote, but that's the gist of it. You know, a lot of the films I've been most entertained by over the years probably wouldn't qualify as good films. Let's take the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes film series. I would not call them good films or great films. Entertaining films? Oh, yeah. And like this film, just fully embraces the absurdity of the concept. And yeah, it's a comedy and they can get away with that. But there are other films like that. You know, I mentioned Bruce Campbell. Let's talk about one of his films, Bubba Hotep, where the whole conceit of the film is that Elvis didn't die in the 70s. He had swapped places with an impersonator. The impersonator died, so Elvis couldn't get back to his fortunes. So an elderly Elvis is stuck in a nursing home with another patient who claims to be John F. Kennedy, who survived his assassination attempt in the 60s, and they have to team up and fight a mummy who has come back to life and is draining the life out of the other residents. It's an entertaining film, and that's a key part of it, is that everybody involved in it, from the writer, director, producer, through the cast, and the other people behind the scenes, just fully embraced the idea of it and made a entertaining film out of it. A good film. I'll even say that's a good film. And, you know, to me, those are the ones I really enjoy. And the ones when I get to talk about them on the podcast, I really get excited about. You know, and you can tell when you watch movies whether, you know, everybody involved just, you know, went along with it. And it helps you as an audience member get pulled along with it and get into the story or the setting or the film, or it does to me. You know, and that's why I love talking about films like, you know, Lost Skeleton of Cadavera, or, you know, Josie and the Pussycats even. Or, you know, if we want to talk about big budget or, you know, a better known director, Del Toro's Pacific Rim. I mean, the whole basis of it is, you know, kaiju versus mechs. And he convinced some big studio to give him a ton of money to do this. And again, just fully embraced the idea and made the best film he could with it. And from the get-go, they sort of establish what kind of film we can expect. The opening scene, and you know, this is one of the things that I told you might not want to play this in public or around your children, is a pretty graphic sex scene between Officer Down and honestly, I'm not sure they ever give the woman a name. And without going into too much detail or getting too graphic about it, let's say that you spend the first few minutes of the film watching Officer Down live up to his name on the lucky young woman. And as the scene goes on, a counter pops up in the corner, keeping track of how many times she's had an orgasm. So immediately the tone is set. And then we get into the hyper-violence of Officer Down taking out a drug dealer known as Headcase Harry. With all the requisite, one shot blowing somebody halfway across the room, another shot blowing someone's head clean off their shoulders with a gun that is physically impossible. I love the fact that, you know, in all these films, like, you know, you can look at RoboCop, you look at Rambo, you can look at, the Hitman, you know, even the games and the films. There's so many times that the action hero has a signature weapon. And in this one, they just fully embrace the insanity of it. And Officer Down's gun is a double-barreled revolver that also has a magazine attached to it. It's literally an impossible gun. It shouldn't work. I'm not even sure how you would reload it. I think through the course of the movie, he reloads it both as a revolver and slips a new magazine into it. But from the get-go, they establish the rules, establish what you can expect out of the film, the humor and the violence, and just run with it. And I loved that. And to me, one of the things that really helped the film is that the script for the film was also written by Joe Casey, who, you know, created the character, wrote the original graphic novel, and also has experience working in scripts and in, you know, production behind the scenes. So, you know, he brought that level of polish to it. He knew the character. He had the experience in order to translate it from one medium to another. And the director of the film, I think, also kind of helped. It's directed by Sean, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Sean Crahan. He's also a founding member of Slipknot. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be a huge expert on Slipknot. I'm aware of the band, of their look. I've heard a few of their songs. Like I said, I'm not going to say I'm a huge fan. I don't dislike them. But, you know, they are one of those groups that you know, I really like some of the songs I've heard from them. Some of them I'm just not. I'm just kind of on the fence on. But, you know, again, wouldn't call myself a huge fan of them and don't really know a whole lot about them. I do know that besides Sean, who directed the film and also appears in it as the head of the Fortune 500 gang, the Lion, and every one of his scenes, he appears in a full head lion mask. You also have Corey Taylor, who plays Head Case Harry, the first villain we get to see Officer Down take down. Did not mean to say that like that, but anyway. Chris Fain, or that might be Fine, who plays another member of the Fortune 500, the Vulture, and Sid Wilson, who shows up at the end of the film as the final crook that Officer Down takes down. Gotta quit doing that. Of course, another advantage that I feel like the filmmakers had and the film itself had, a huge advantage, is the producers of the film, whose names I didn't bother to write down, but they also produced the Crank films, the Jason Statham films, and this movie is pretty much on the level of insanity, maybe even a little bit more than those films. And in fact, there's a lot of people in the cast, and I'm sure behind the scenes as well, besides the producers, who worked on one or both of the Crank films. So they already had the, you know, experience of making this over-the-top, action-heavy, almost cartoonish sort of film. And so I feel like that helped play into this film. And I haven't read the graphic novel, so I can't tell you how accurate it is. But as a film, it is a frenetic, just chaotic mess in all of the right and best ways. Now, Officer Down himself is played by Kim Coates. And honestly, with the sunglasses on and in the uniform and everything, depending on the angle they shoot him at in the film, he either reminds me in a lot of scenes of Bert Bert Gummer from Tremors? Or I can't think of the character's name. Tom Savini's character in From Dusk Till Dawn. For some reason, Kim Coates, depending on the lighting and whatnot in the film, reminds me of one of those two characters, depending on whether he has the sunglasses on or not. But again, I feel like he's perfect for this role. He brings with it the right amount of badass. I mean, he's like I said, he's like Dirty Harry and Judge Dredd's love child. If you'd like to see other stuff that Kim Coates has been in, the most current thing at the time of recording is the television series Children Ruin Everything. You may recognize him once the glasses come off for his role in Sons of Anarchy. He's been acting for a while. His first role is all the way back in 1982 in the Nicolas Cage film The Boy in Blue. He's also had roles in The Last Boy Scout, Innocent Blood, Black Hawk Down, Battlefield Earth, Pearl Harbor, and Goon. Now, the thing about films like this, and you know, one of the things I feel like Kim did best, is you need to sort of embrace the insanity of it. You need to, you know, just go along with and make people believe you know, all the craziness that you're throwing in. You know, gun-running nuns, a whole, you know, criminal gang calling themselves the Fortune 500 that appears to be run by furries. You know, a cop that's brought back to life through the telekinetic powers of people who suffer from Lou Gehrig's disease. And you know, like I said, Coates plays it straight. I mean, he fits in and just, you can tell he's having fun in the role and he's, you know, like I said, making you believe in it and, you know, dragging you along on this crazy journey. And a lot of the rest of the cast does too. You can just tell a lot of the rest of them are just loving the fact that they're able to just go so over the top in the role, just do things that you couldn't get away with in other films. Some of the other people in the film, the police chief, played by Luna Lauren Velez, her most recent thing I could find was Power, Book 2, Ghost, which is the Starz television series. Her first acting role in a film was all the way back in the 1990s, and I like it like that. She's also appeared in the TV series New York Undercover, Oz, Ugly Betty, How to Get Away with Murder. She did voice work in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and also the films Swallow and the most recent Shaft film. For this film, her character as the police chief seems to be channeling Amanda Waller from the Suicide Squad films. Burnham, who is the chief scientist in charge of making sure the project that keeps bringing down back to life keeps working, is played by Sam Witwer, who I didn't recognize at first. But again, he is, you know, like Coates and Velez is just embracing the mad scientist character in the film. It's one of my favorite minor characters in the film. You can find him in other things such as Mythic Quest. He also had a small role in Solo, A Star Wars Story. He appeared in Crank. He also did stunt work in Crank. The film The Mist, the television series Dark Angel, Being Human. The one thing I recognized him from when I saw the name, though, is he was the mocap actor and the basis for the look of the Starkiller character from the Force Unleashed series of games. Another actor that popped up and sort of threw me when I first saw him is Glenn Howerton, who plays Dominic, a small-time hood who is trying to make a deal with the gun-running nuns in a scene. Of course, Glenn's most famous role is probably Dennis from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He also had a role in Crank. He's also had roles in films The Strangers, The Hunt, and Must Love Dogs, as well as the NBC sitcom AP Bio. And speaking of gun-running nuns, who happen to be the second group that Officer Down takes down, the second gang, the Mother Supreme is played by Meadow Williams, who has been in the films Boss Level, Eileen Wuornos, American Boogie Woman, the Steven Seagal film Out for Justice, The Mask, Apollo 13, Den of Thieves, and the film After. She's also a writer and producer in Hollywood. She was an executive producer for Boss Level, Eileen Wuornos, American Boogie Woman, and After, and Den of Thieves. And in a weird coincidence, I'm recording this on her birthday. So I don't know if she'll ever hear it, but in case she ever does, happy birthday, Meadow. Mind you, this episode's still going to come out a few days afterwards, but you know, it's the thought that counts, I guess. I got to admit, I wish they'd done a little more with Mother Supreme and the gun-running nuns. I feel like they were a better villain than the Fortune 500, who are supposed to be the big villains of the whole piece. You know, a bunch of nuns running around in outfits that looked like they ripped them from the sexy nun rack at Spirit Halloween, who apparently, given the way they distort her voice and some of the things that happen on screen, when Meadow's character of Mother Supreme starts talking, apparently do serve some kind of extra-dimensional demonic entity. So, yeah, I feel like it could have been, I don't want to say better, but a little more interesting, given that there's one point in the film where Mother Supreme actually tries to prevent Officer Down from coming back. I feel like that could have been an interesting angle to explore. You know, here, her and her nuns serve some sort of, you know, demon or, you know, dark god, and, you know, have access to these powers and access to the world beyond life versus a cop that keeps returning from that world. But, you know, I don't know. I'm going to get to the parts that I didn't like about the film in a minute. I'll stay a little bit with the gun-running nuns. Her right-hand... Well, her main lieutenant is Sister Blister, played by Allison Lohman, who most recognizably from the film Drag Me to Hell. She also had roles in Big Fish, White Oleander, Matchstick Men, and Things We Lost in the Fire. Weirdly enough, this is her last acting credit. Apparently, not long after this film, she decided to retire, and she's now basically an acting coach. And according to IMDb, she's had a couple of like cameo roles in her husband's film. Apparently he's a filmmaker, but this is like her last role, and she retired to focus on her family more than being an actress, like I said, and being an acting coach, which is really weird in that this would be her final film, considering some of the other things that she's done. And I'm not knocking that. I mean, you know, there's plenty of actors and actresses and people who've walked away from careers in order to focus on their family. And that's what she wants to do. Hey, good for her. You know, she's got the money to do it and focus on other things in her life. And I'm just saying that, one, to me, it was kind of strange seeing her in this film when I recognized her. And then two, to go to IMDb and find out that, no, this is the last thing that she's ever done, is playing a gun-running nun taking on an undead cop in a film directed by one of the founding members of Slipknot. And the sequence where he's fighting the nuns produced one of my favorite moments in the film, something that made me chuckle. He's just walking through, and the nuns are shooting at him, and he's just headshotting them one after the other. And every time he kills one of them, you hear the ping that you would hear at like a carnival shooting gallery type sound. So you just see like a nun fly back with a bullet hole right between the eyes and the bing, bing, bing. I don't know why, that just cracked me up when I was watching the film. And the film is full of little moments like that I loved. You know, the Fortune 500 hire a kung fu master and his students in order to take down Officer Down. And I just realized I didn't write down the guy's name. But you know, the first time you meet him, he's doing impossible exercises. He's doing like a handstand where he's supporting himself on just two fingers, like doing push-ups with that. And the film stock changes from clear modern day to 70s kung fu style film. You know, you see the artifacts in the film. The colors are slightly off. It's slightly blurry, and he's speaking in what I'm assuming is Chinese. And then he switches to English. Like, he literally when he does it, he goes, you know, screw these subtitles, and just switches to English. And the minute he switches to English, his lips never match what he's saying for the rest of the film. And I love that they did that, but I kind of hate that, you know, after that opening shot, he's, you know, shot in the same lighting and, frame as everyone else. You know, I kind of wish they'd kept going with the theme that every time you've seen him or one of his people, it shifted to like, you know, look like a 70s kung fu type film. But, again, I'm just nitpicking at this point. So let's get into what I didn't like about the film. And that is the main character and the crew of cops that back up Officer Down. Because that's the thing. He dies in every mission. And there's a dedicated team whose sole job is to recover his body so that they can bring him back to life. And I didn't even bother. There's like four members of the team. I only wrote two of them down because there's just really, I really don't know how else to put it, that they're the worst part of the film. And their story arc, especially the rookie, is the worst part of the film. And I think especially one of the things I didn't like about, well, I'll get to him in a minute, but the story arc of the rookie, the way they kind of set it up and the things the chief says at the beginning and the way that the rookie's acting and, the fact that Officer Down appears to be having problems when he comes back. You know, there's like little flashbacks and like he'll, almost like Tourette's, like he'll jerk, you know, and have seizures and spasms at some points. Like it's starting to wear on him. You know, you find out he's been dead for 25 years. So that, you know, she's been doing, you know, been brought back who knows how many times for over two decades. And you can tell it's kind of starting to wear on him. And honestly, at the risk of spoiling it, I kind of got this idea from the beginning when they brought the rookie in, because they talk about, when he was alive, Officer Downs, that he had no wife, he had no friends, he had no life outside of being a cop. That's all he wanted to be, was a cop. And he wanted to, you know, he saw himself as the only thing that was keeping the city safe, the only thing that was keeping civilization from falling into ruin. He was just dedicated 100% to the job, which made him the perfect candidate for this program, to be this secret weapon just constantly being sent out in order to take down the most dangerous elements of the city. And there are very obvious parallels between Officer Down and the rookie. You know, both of them look in the mirror and remind themselves that they're cops, remind themselves that, you know, they're the line, they're there to protect the city. You know, the rookie is shown to have that same kind of level of dedication, like he could possibly be another Officer Down. And I kind of expected them to go with that. And, you know, like I was thinking, okay, is that it? It's like, we're starting to find out that Officer Down has sort of reached the limit of how many times he can be brought back. And that's why they brought this, you know, guy just his first day on the force, and they're going to bring him into this super secret project. Is we're going to find out at the end, he's the new Officer Down. And it just never happened. And the thing is, the film kind of sets it up like you kind of expect it to happen because something happens to Officer Down at one point. But yeah, the whole story of the rookie, you know, trying to get him back and, you know, feeling something for Officer Down and like, you know, everybody else treats him as a weapon and he wants to see him as a person. Like that whole story arc, I don't know, to me it's the worst part of the film, especially because they sort of set the rookie up to be, like I said, like a modern version of Officer Down when he was still alive. So to me, it just sort of didn't make sense, this turn he had of, you know, oh, he's a person, and oh, we need to go in there and he's killing everybody in the building, but we need to be in there to back him up. And no, I just kind of didn't buy it. And I think part of it is down to the people they cast as the backup, the rookie, and the character has a name. I couldn't tell you what it was. I mean, that's how little of an impression this actor made on me. And the role made on me throughout the course of the film, I can't even tell you what the character's name is, and I didn't care enough to even look it up, so I'm just going to call him Rook, because that's what most of the people in the film called him anyway. It's played by Tyler Ross, and I think the most recent thing he's been in is a show or a movie, I'm not even sure which, like this is how little of an impression this guy made on me. Crashing Together. His first was a TV movie called Searching for David's Heart. And I was like, is this a horror movie or is this like a romantic movie? But no, it's apparently this chick, I think Danielle Panabaker, who finds her brother dies in an accident and his heart gets transplanted into somebody. And she goes looking for the person that it was transplanted into for some reason. He's also in the film Little Men, the Zombieland TV show they tried to launch a few years ago on Amazon, and Princess Sid. And like I said, he's probably the weakest actor in the whole cast. Him and two of the other members of the backup team for Officer Down. I mean, they're just, and I know I'm probably shouldn't be saying that for considering the other characters in the film, but all of them are just so thin. There's nothing to them. And especially, like I said, the rookie, the character arc they take him on just doesn't, I don't know, to me it didn't ring right with the way they introduced him and, you know, the kind of type of person sort of set him up to be. And honestly, I can't sit here and tell you, you know, definitively that it was due to the script or the director, or I'm just going to put all my bets on, it's just the actor they got to play the rookie. Yeah. I feel like you'd have replaced him with one of those big mouth Billy Bass, singing fish that just mouthed the lines that they gave to him. And it probably would have left the same impression on me as this guy did. The only other member of the backup squad that even made an impression on me is Carter. That's because I spent the entire film trying to figure out where I'd seen him before. But he's played by Reno Wilson, who I recognize from Mike and Molly. He's also been in the films Good Girls. He's been in the TV show Good Girls, as well as the television shows Fresh Prince, Martin. He is in the Steve Martin film Sergeant Bilko. Also, The Great White Hype. He's done several voices for different Transformers and the Michael Bay films. And he also had a small role in Crank High Voltage. So, you know, what else can I talk about? Here's the other thing about this film. I watched it on Hulu. And I could not find a whole lot on the internet about it. about the production of it, about the actors, you know, any of the stories, releases, anything like that. You know, my Google Foo failed me this time. You know, and like I said, I don't have a physical copy of it, so I don't know if there's any behind the scenes stuff or commentary about the film that may provide a little bit more to it. I did enjoy the music as well. You know, as should be for this kind of film, a lot of guitars, a lot of yelling, the Officer Down theme song, I did find entertaining as well. But yeah, you know, let's just start wrapping it up. Let's go ahead and get to the part of the show where we ask the most important question of all. Was it entertaining? Yeah, I'll recommend this film. Go out and watch it, or you know, stream it on Hulu, or if you can find it somewhere cheap, buy it. It is exactly, go watch the trailer. It is exactly what you expect from it after watching the trailer. It is ridiculous. It is hyper-violent. It is gratuitous nudity. It is just over-the-top characters, and it is just incredibly fun to watch. The majority of it, I'd say 80% of it. You know, if you want to, you can skip over any scenes with the rookie in them. You're not really going to miss much. Like I said, his storyline and how he interacts with you know, the other cops and with Officer Down is the most uninteresting part of the film. And I'm going to lay that at the actor's feet because, I mean, here's the thing. I keep harping on this. Like I said, none of the characters you can really say have a lot of depth to them. You know, they're all caricatures. They're all, you know, just like I said, meant to be larger than life. You know, they're meant to be, you know, just, a, you know, even the ones that aren't, like, you know, the criminals especially are supposed to be these larger than life, cartoonishly evil characters. But even the ones that aren't supposed to be that, like the chief or, you know, like the scientist and the head of the project, they're supposed to be real, but taken up a couple of notches. You know, they're supposed to be little exaggerated. And with the rookie, there's just nothing there. Like I said, they sort of set him up to be this really intense, like, you know, oh, I'm a cop now. You know, I've got the badge. I'm law and order. Like I said, they set him up to parallel Officer Down. And then they do nothing with it. Nothing interesting with it to me. He just, like I said, his whole story arc and what they do in the second half of the film, I kind of wish I knew more about the production so I could understand or could have gotten a hold of the graphic novel to see if it follows the same story, because I just don't get why they went with the story in the direction that they did. Like I said, the clues I picked up, the way they set up in the beginning of the film, you know, they got these interesting villains. I even think, you know, the throwaway villains of the nuns are much more interesting than the main bad guys of the Fortune 500 and the Kung Fu Master. I think there was an interesting parallel there that could have been explored. But, yeah, like I said, to me, at some point, the beginning of the film up until what happens to Officer Down, spoiler, he gets captured by the Kung Fu guy, and the final half of the film, well, I guess like the final quarter of the film by that point, it just feels almost like they're two different films in a way. It's like once they take the focus off of Officer Down and put it on the rookie trying to find him and rescue him, it's like the film just loses whatever momentum and fun and joy it has. I still highly recommend it. I do think it's a good film overall, once you take all of it together. But I do feel like they took someone who couldn't be the most interesting character in a scene by himself and suddenly made him the focus of the movie. And like I said, I wonder if there's a story behind that, like a budget reason or studio interference or something. Because like I said, the final, like, supposed to be the climax of the film, the getting up to the climax of the film, getting up to the point where you know, Officer Down saves the day and takes everybody down. You know, that section between him getting captured and that point just doesn't seem to fit with the rest of the film. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. Join us next week as we'll be talking about the John Cusack and Minnie Driver film, Gross Point Blank. So go out and remember, there's a lot of things you can be in life. One of the best things you can be is kind. And if you like what you heard, go back to wherever you got this from and leave us a review. Recommend us to your friends. No, wait, sorry. I've been on hiatus. I forgot about this, how I did this part. If you like what you heard, tell a friend. If you didn't, tell an enemy. I'm trying to get back into making more posts on social media. I'm still on Twitter at CFeverDreams. Still on Instagram at CelluloidFeverDreams. And still on TikTok at CelluloidFeverDreams if you want to follow me anywhere. If you have any other suggestions of social media platforms I could go to or that people are moving to, since apparently this whole thing with Twitter is going on, be sure to tell me. Yeah, drop me a line at one of those places, and hey, I'll start posting stuff erratically up on that one as well. But until next time, like I said, be nice to yourself because you deserve it. And go out and find something interesting to watch. But until next week, this has been Celluloid Fever Dreams. I have been Wyndham Jennings, and good night, everybody.